Hello, everyone. Today I'm with Dr. Don. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Evan Zahn. I am the director of the congenital heart program out here at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, California. And I am a pediatric interventional cardiologist by training.
Mm-hmm. So thank you again for coming today and joining. So you mentioned that you specialize in congenital heart disease. So just in general sense, how does that differ from like general heart disease that is so commonly talked about?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think one that most people don't really get. Congenital heart disease refers to a heart disease that you are born with. So basically it's a birth defect. And in fact, not only in the United States, but worldwide, it is the number one birth defect by a lot. A little less than 1% of the population around the world is born with a heart problem. Fortunately, a large many of those don't need any type of surgery or intervention, but nonetheless, the heart is still abnormally formed. I tend to deal with sort of sicker babies and kids who have diseases that need treatment, often as early as, you know, the first few hours of life. I'm actually just coming from a baby who's 21 days of age, who was very sick, but now is going to be just fine. So that's sort of a typical day for us.
Mm-hmm. And you said, so most you would say are not, so most, the ones that don't require surgery, would you say that's like most of them, or do, like, what percentage is there an approximate?
Where you are and what you do. I think in the greater picture, yes, most of them. But for what I do, you know, I don't see those kinds of babies. So the vast majority of babies we see need something done, of course. That's sort of, but yes, I think clearly not 1% of the whole population needs heart surgery in childhood. So it's most of them can be followed out, and some of them spontaneously get better depending on what the nature of the problem is. That's as opposed to, as you said, general cardiology, or what we call acquired disease. That's what the vast majority of people have, especially like my age and up, where we build up plaque and high blood pressure and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And so with congenital heart disease, I know that some, as you said, are more severe than others. There's a lot of variation, it seems. So are there specific like types of congenital heart disease, with some being that are most common, with some being characteristically worse than others?
Yes to both of those kind of statements. So there are whole societies and whole textbooks dedicated to the categorization of congenital heart disease, because as you mentioned, it's nearly infinite. Since the heart, you know, begins forming very early in gestation, and it's the only moving structure really in our body, it's beating from the beginning, it's incredibly complicated. And in fact, it's always a wonder to me that anybody comes out perfect, because it's really a complex formation. So yes, you can characterize diseases. There's all kinds of ways to do it. Some are diseases that make children blue, or what we call cyanotic, versus those that don't make them cyanotic but make them sick from heart failure. So that's one sort of general classification. More often than not, those of us in the field, the classifications are anatomy specific. So there are many, 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 many different things that can go wrong. Everything from only having one pumping chamber to two chambers, instead of two chambers, any of the valves can be broken. Many of the valves can be broken. We can have holes between the chambers. The heart can be in the wrong part of the chest, and so on and so forth. And any of those things can happen in combination. So the classification gets pretty complicated as you start digging down a little deeper.
Oh, wow. And so I didn't realize how unique, and obviously it seems like very individualized, your methods of treatment have to be, because everything is so, so different and personalized and personal, which is sort of interesting and very interesting. So I guess some of these things would be questions I have are probably going to be more general based. And in a general sense, how should parents best cater to the needs of children that have congenital heart disease. In a sense, like the ones that heal themselves, is there anything parents need to do if they're, or will that ever be like when they come home, or is that nothing that they ever have to worry about?
So the goal, our goal in our field is really to get kids to live as normal a life as possible. And we really encourage, you know, in the old days, like when I was training and before then, people were very worried that kids with heart disease could hurt themselves or do permanent damage, let's say, if they exerted themselves. They used to tell, in fact, babies to tell the moms, you know, don't let them cry too much. Having four kids of my own, I know how impossible that would be. So our goal, or my goal, I should say, has always been, how can we get your child so that you don't have to treat him specially? Now, that's not always possible. Sometimes we do have to restrict kids from certain activities, but the overwhelming majority of our patients can really do almost anything. And that includes sports, and the girls, when they grow up, can have babies if they wish. Even competitive sports, military service. We really try and get our kids to that point, should they want to do those things. Now, that might require a series of therapies, surgeries, or what I do, which is sort of minimally invasive therapies or medicines. But again, the end game of all of that is to make sure that the kids can lead a pretty normal life, and that the parents really don't have to look after them in any particularly special way.
Mm-hmm. So that's so basically for the kid and for the parent, the fact that they can basically in most circumstances continue to live and do what they would like to do. But congenital heart disease, it seems like many cases end up in success, and it's often that they're able to be treated. Is there ever like a situation like, is death a common thing or mortality, or is the success rate for treatment to congenital heart disease overwhelmingly positive?
Yeah, it's both. So it depends on how you look at it. We certainly have all experienced the death of a child or a baby or an adult that used to have congenital heart disease. So that does happen. But fortunately, it is becoming rarer and rarer. The average typical success rate in the United States for all comers, basically, even the complicated cases, is generally above 95%. Wow. So that's not everybody. We have a ways to go till it's 100%. But you know, people ask me all the time when I tell them what I do, that a lot of the responses are, oh my gosh, that must be so sad. And I tell them it's actually exactly the opposite. You know, I just came from doing a case on a little baby and, you know, got a hug from a mom and a dad, because then that's much more typical than losing a patient. Sure, we occasionally lose patients and it's heartbreaking and there's nothing like it. But that is becoming rarer and rarer. I've been doing this 33 years, and over those three decades, I've really seen dramatic increases in not just survival, but the quality of life that our kids can lead. And in fact, at this point in my career, 50% of my patients are adults. They started as babies, but I've been doing this a long time. And now they've grown into adulthood and they're leading productive, healthy, active adult lives. The key is to stay in contact with the medical community. I think a lot of parents and a lot of kids and the medical community was guilty back in the day for not educating families. So they left with the opinion that, oh, I'm cured. And with congenital heart disease, we can make you better. We can make you live a normal, help you live a normal life. But there are still issues that need to be addressed as we get older. And it's really important that our patients stay in the medical community, stay involved with their physicians.
Mm-hmm. And so to speak on like that, this is a bit of a side note, but I know people who have a congenital heart disease, and they've actually had COVID worse. Is that like a common thing, or is that, you know?
I'm not aware that our patients got COVID at a higher rate than other kids, but there is some literature to suggest that when our patients had to go into the hospital with COVID, that they didn't do as well in general when compared to a population that didn't have heart disease.
Mm-hmm. And that's sort of, is there like an obvious reason as to why that would be the case?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say it's obvious, but you know, again, I think a lot of our patients are out there functioning beautifully, doing great, but that doesn't necessarily mean they have a completely normal circulation. Mm-hmm. So if you impose a stressor on it, not just COVID, any major illness, for instance, our babies can get very sick from a common virus called RSV, respiratory syncytial virus. And at a certain age and with certain heart diseases, we really want those babies immunized, whereas regular babies don't need to be immunized against that. And that's because we know they don't handle that virus as well because of their heart disease. So I think, you know, living with congenital heart disease, again, most of our patients lead very normal lives. But if you impose a secondary stressor, a serious infection, like COVID, for instance, it makes sense that they might have that some patients might have a more difficult time handling that.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned that the mortality rate, as you've seen it through your years, have declined and that treatments have gotten better. So generally speaking, what are the main treatment methods for congenital heart disease besides just like the traditional, I guess, surgery?
Yeah, well, I think the improvements we've seen to a large extent are based on our surgical colleagues and how brilliantly they've advanced their field. And it's not just when we say surgery, everybody thinks of the heart surgeon as they should, but it's not just the surgeon. What's gotten better is anesthesia. We have dedicated pediatric cardiac anesthesiologists who understand not just cardiac physiology, but childhood physiology with heart disease. So that's gotten much better. And when the operations are done, the kids now go to specialized units, congenital cardiac intensive care units, where the nurses all know how to take care of these kids. And there are doctors who are specially trained in that. So it's not just the actual putting in the stitches. It's the whole sort of community that's around the heart surgery. That's made a huge difference. The other part of it, I think, is really related to what I do and the colleagues that do what I do, which really came up. I joined this at the beginning, so about 30 years ago, and that's minimally invasive therapies. I just came, as I said, from a little baby's case who was really blue and really sick and critically ill. And now he's pink, and we didn't have to open his chest to do that. That's something we can now do with a catheter. We do valve replacements of every valve with a catheter. We close holes with catheters. And the difference is, you know, Band-Aid on your leg versus an open chest and a bypass machine. So I think those advancements, both in the surgical and non-surgical realm, have made a huge difference. And then, of course, our colleagues who do non-invasive cardiology. So what we do, as we talked about earlier, it's so infinite in terms of every kid is like a snowflake. We don't see the same things twice very often. So our colleagues who specialize in imaging those things, whether that's with ultrasound or MRI or CT scan, the technology and the knowledge and skill of those people has gotten so good over the last 30 years that, you know, you can't begin treating stuff till you accurately know what it is. So that's made a huge and a profound difference as well.
Mm-hmm. So with minimally invasive therapies that you do, so it's essentially what you do is you're able to fix or treat heart diseases without actually opening the person up. So when would you use like a minimally invasive therapy versus have to like resort to opening someone up?
Well, I think the key there is working in a team setting where you have everybody's experience and opinion at the table. So there's a myriad of different diseases I could rattle off and states that I would treat. But what it really comes down to is, like most congenital heart programs in the country, we have a meeting every week. Ours is on Monday morning, where about 30 of us sit down, our general cardiologists, our imaging cardiologists, our cardiac anesthesiologists, our nurse practitioners who play a very important role, our heart surgeons, so on and so forth, even our research people to make sure we're up to that, we know what the latest and greatest is. And we present each child and each baby, and we try and strategize what is best, not just for that baby in that time. But because we want our patients to live to old age, if we do this now, will that be good for the next thing this patient needs in 40 years? So we really try and plan out a baby's, even for a newborn, sort of the arc of their lifetime. And sure, in our program, our philosophy is we would always like to default to the least invasive strategy. So there's no competition, let's say, between the surgeon and what I do. We work together and we try and plot this out, but sometimes a more invasive procedure, even though it sounds worse because they have to open you up, is actually much better for you. You'll get more duration out of that. You'll have a better result. So I think the key is collaboration, mm-hmm. planning.
Yeah, a lot of the behind the scenes, which I feel like often doesn't get the attention that, well, how vital it is. It's often undervalued. I think when the medical profession sort of like people's perceptions of what goes on. So my last question is just in a general sense, is there any, like, what does the future of treatment look like? Is there going to be anything that will make it so, does it seem ever possible that surgery as a whole will become unnecessary, that new treatments will come about that are less invasive? Like, is anything seemingly like going to change the field anytime soon?
Well, the field has changed so dramatically in the last 20 years. The volume of surgeries has gone down, of heart surgery, both in acquired and congenital heart disease, because we can treat so much in the cath lab. That being said, open heart surgery is still vitally important. And I suppose it's theoretically possible that someday, but it's very hard for me to wrap my head around that. I think there'll always be a place for skilled heart surgeons. You know, the guys who and women who end up doing that are really, most often the cream of the crop, you know, really talented physicians with a special technical skill set coupled with, you know, really brilliant minds. So those people, I think, will always be needed. I think what they treat will change. I think in terms of what we do with minimally invasive and catheter-based therapy, that'll continue to advance because look at the rest of the world's technology, miniaturization, computerization, nanotechnology, that's all going to play a role. Biotechnologies, bioprinting, that's all going to play a role in what we do as we go forward.
Mm-hmm. So that's really, that makes me quite optimistic and excited to see. I mean, again, yeah, I agree with you that from at least the other, and with the other doctors that I've interviewed, it's always the same idea that how quickly this medical, the medical field is changing and improving, and how every second there's a new innovation that can change it completely. And I think it's something to be optimistic about. And it's pretty amazing that we're able to get to this the stage where new things are happening every day.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way to look at it. I'm incredibly optimistic about the future. You know, I feel like I'm really lucky to have been in a field that's just sort of advanced at light speed, you know, while I was part of it and got to contribute to that a little bit. And yeah, I think the future is really bright. And I encourage young people, you know, doctors are famous for telling people not to go into medicine. I know when I said I want to go into medicine, everybody told me not to. It'll be terrible by the time you're out. But meanwhile, here I am, you know, 33 years practicing medicine, and I think it's as great as ever.
Mm-hmm. So thank you again. Thank you for coming. And I think what you said was really interesting. And I learned a lot, and hope everyone that listens to this learns a lot. So thank you.
My pleasure, Jake. It was nice chatting with you.